Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
What a show for you we have today.
We do.
You know what's really exciting? So we've been in this time slot for a couple months now, right?
Yes.
We actually have some fans.
Is that right?
Yeah, we do.
I have a hard time believing that.
No,
that's true.
We actually had one person.
Outside of this room?
Outside of this room. That says they love. Well, actually, no, that's not true. We've had three or four on LinkedIn get to us and say, I love your show.
That's fantastic.
And one of them actually said they were a fan, right?
Yes.
And we didn't have to pay them.
No.
A non-relative, non-friend,
yes,
not in this room individual.
An actual real person out there that listens to the show all the time.
Hooray, Biz Talk. That's a milestone.
Yeah, I know. It was so encouraging. Now, something else that was encouraging is the help that I got from Al in Florida. And I know you're listening, Al. He is my hero today. He spent 45 minutes with me on the phone getting Microsoft all worked out for me on our new laptops.
Wait a minute. Are you giving Microsoft a free plug?
I'm giving Al a free plug because he is definitely my hero.
Microsoft doesn't need our plugs unless they're going to pay us.
So, I don't know. They might be struggling.
Al
does.
Al, yes.
All right. Thank you, Al.
Thank you, Al. We love you. And thanks for being a new fan of the show. I know you're going to watch.
So that's how you get fans. You call customer service.
Tech support.
Tech support all day long. And tell
Al,
people you're on the radio.
That's it. Hi, Al. This is me. Is that you? Okay. We're good.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk with someone named Dana Korn. She is the chief energizing officer.
I love that.
I know. For Sonic Boom Wellness. They've done some really unique things in wellness for companies. And when I first heard that they've done unique things, I thought, okay, I've heard just about every kind of wellness thing you can do. What they've done is really unique. I'm very excited to hear what Dana has to say. Our first guest, though, is with us, John Bean. He is founder and CEO of MIM Computing. John, welcome.
Oh, welcome. Thank you.
Glad you could be with us today. Now, MIM Computing, and I'm reading through what it does and what you folks do there, is probably beyond the scope of the average listener out there in terms of the kinds of work you do. I'm sure if we spent a lot of time, we could all figure it out. But it's a very advanced mathematical formula that you're working on with supercomputing type power. Would that be a fair way to say it?
Absolutely.
Good, then we're done with the interview.
Okay, thanks for coming in. Thanks.
Life is groovy.
Yeah.
Now I'm not scared anymore that you won't say anything that I won't understand because I got it all figured out.
You do.
So in your words, though, what does MIM Computing do?
Well, so we solve combinatorial optimization problems. So there's some big words for you.
Oh, I like
optimization problem. So those are the types of problems where you have a whole slew of answers, potential answers, and you have to figure out what's the best one. So take UPS, for example. Every morning they have to create a new route for each truck, and they may have 150 deliveries. There's really 150 factorial, sorry, using another big word, but there's just millions of permutations, actually billions of permutations of different routes that they could take. To figure out the best route, you actually have to calculate every single one and then see which one is really the best.
This is something they're already working. I mean, I've heard that their trucks don't make left turns anymore. I don't know how much there's that, but they're trying to optimize, right? It means big money to them, I would imagine.
It's if they save 1 mile per truck per year, it's $30 million.
Wow.
Right. So we're hoping to help them as well. So our technology
Are you working a deal with them where you get a percentage of what you save them? Because that would be a good payday.
That's how we hope to price it. So we don't have any paying customers yet. But and actually, I'm not even talking to UPS yet. I haven't had a good connection. But they're a great potential customer.
We can hook you up. We know everybody.
Excellent.
I imagine if you can do this for them, it's not going to be too hard to get their ear if you can prove that the technology actually works. What are the limitations currently with computers the way they are today? Why can't they do that kind of problem?
It's because they calculate these in brute force. So these problems are the type where you actually have to calculate every single solution before you can figure out the
best. And it's linear. You can't calculate the next solution until you have the first one done because you don't know which way that driver turned.
Right.
So until you know which way that driver turned.
Oh, no. You can do it. You can do it on the fly, but they do it in the morning. They'll calculate the best route before they leave. So this is the intention of where to go.
Does it recalculate during the day? Is that
They can't. Because it's just too much computing power for them. That's the type of thing that we'd be able to bring to them.
And why are you able to, at MEM Computing, bring these advanced solutions to things that brute force doesn't work with right now in today's computers? Because I think what we have today are pretty powerful, you know, compared to everything in the past.
Absolutely.
Why does MEM Computing exist? What's missing?
Well, there's a couple of physicists who invented it. They're from UCSD, PhD physicists that I work with, that they looked at how computers act. They looked at the physics of computers, and they realized that current computers aren't taking advantage of all the physics. So what they did is they came up with a way to change this computing problem to a physics problem, and then they solved the physics problem, so which is easy for them and happens to be insanely fast.
So the way I understand most computing today is, we figured out computers back in the 40s and 50s, and we started these computational machines. They were manual at the time. And then they developed semiconductors, and from that point on, it's been electronics. And we've had basic components of the computer. We've had the storage, which has traditionally been a drive of some sort, hard drive, floppy drive. Now we're getting into static drives and other forms of storage. We've had the random access memory, the memory itself. And then the clock, the processor, right, that does all the work. And nothing's really changed from that. That stayed the same
right.
From the beginning of computing till now.
Yep.
What does MEM computing do? Does it take away pieces of that puzzle? Does it combine them together? How does it get advances physically in using physics?
So one of the things it does in the design is that it actually has memory in the computation engine. So right now, as you said, memory and the CPU are separate. And one of the things that people have done to get little boosts of speed is they try and move the memory closer and closer and closer and closer.
Physically, you mean?
Physically closer.
Because the bus, the transport between them is exactly. The slow part of the whole process.
Exactly.
So physically, if you locate them closer, it really does speed enough to make a difference?
Well, yeah, just because the...
Holy cow!
Yeah, there's so many calculations that happen so quickly that every fraction of a second...
So you're moving stuff in and out of... I like to think of the processor like the workshop in the garage, and that you can make things in there, but then you got to take them out to the shed when you're done working on them to store them out there.
Right.
And if you want to work on it again, you got to go get it and bring it back in, and you can't have too many things in the workshop all at once.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I think of it. So what you're saying is somebody built a workshop that has storage right in it.
It has cubbies in it, yeah.
So you don't have to take anything anywhere. It's already there.
Right.
Now, that could save a lot of time. Do they know that?
I don't know.
Bring that back to them. They'll appreciate that tidbit of knowledge.
Well, thank you. Now I have a value proposition, so I appreciate that.
We're going to find out when we get back how they're doing this with physics. John Bean is with us, CEO, founder of MEM Computing, a company that does some really awesome things, which we're still trying to figure out. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting today from the ESET studios. ESET Internet Security, do more. Want a podcast of this show? Of course you do. Go to ESPN1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
I'm Bob Ryan. And John Bean is with us, founder and CEO of MEM Computing. It's a company that I'm not going to try to describe again because it's a lot, but it does advanced mathematical calculations. And, John, thanks again for being here.
Yeah, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you. So,
we appreciate that in person.
The technology that MEM Computing is bringing to the table, it's not software solutions, right? It's a hardware physics solution to the computer calculation problem.
So here's part of just what's so amazing about it. So the design is a hardware design. It's a new circuit design. However, it's so fast that one of the things you do when you build a circuit is you actually test it in software first. So before you build it, you want to make sure that
there's no software that can keep up.
Well, what we found is that the software emulation of this circuit is already insanely fast. So what we're actually releasing first is the software. We're calling it a software-based coprocessor.
So you design software to emulate what you were going to produce physically.
Yes.
And that software emulation is so fast, you're releasing that before you're actually releasing what you produced.
Exactly.
Is it scary that I understand what you're saying?
That's great. No.
Okay.
So because I'm probably more of a layperson than you, you've actually done in code what you were planning on doing in the hardware and building,
right.
And that code is faster than anything else that's out there already.
Exactly.
Are you going to then couple that with the hardware once
yes.
it's out and expect that that would just be exponentially even
more? Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll do evolutionary. Right now it's software. Then we'll go in firmware, which is where you write the software right on the
right.
CPU, the board.
Okay.
And then ultimately we'll build a chip. But that when you get into hardware, it gets more and more expensive. So the beauty is being able to start with software is it's going to fund our subsequent.
So are one of these days we're going to open up the top of a computer, instead of seeing a chip that says Intel, we're going to see one that says MIM Computing?
I hope so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't tell Intel.
That
yeah, I hear they've got a
deal.
Presence in town.
Yeah.
By the way, if you can make this fast enough, it'll be so fast. How fast will it be? That will respond before you hit the keyboard.
Yes.
Now that's fast.
Yes, that's fast.
That's almost a BMI, right? You would
yeah.
have to just think it,
yeah.
and the computer's
yeah.
already doing it.
So the advantage to this is much faster computer calculations. Things are pretty fast already. What are we missing? What can't we do with our current technology that MIM Computing will be able to open the door for us to do?
Right. So give you another example. When when people develop chips, when they design chips, they have to do what they call place and route all the components on the chip. So the routing is the interconnections between all those. That's a very difficult problem that right now, when Intel releases another chip, it can take them weeks to perform that activity. That's one of those problems that is geared very well for MIM Computing. So we could drop that significantly.
And I'm guessing for Intel, weeks is millions of dollars.
Yes.
So that's the kind of thing. What about things like traffic control or flight patterns, things like that? Will that add to the value there? I know we have Waze, which gives us a lot of information, can try to reroute us a little bit, but there's got to be better ways. You were talking about UPS earlier.
Yeah.
Is that one of the solutions that
Absolutely.
We have access
Oh, yeah.
to?
It's so many areas that it covers, but definitely air traffic control. We're actually talking to a port for ship control and also container dealing with all. They have thousands of containers that they have to handle on a daily basis.
What's the commonality between all these things that MIM Computing, that this program or this hardware allows to, you know, you to accomplish these things, whereas others weren't?
It's really that these problems have so many answers. And you want to have the most efficient one. So if you're building a chip, you want to have it as efficient as possible so that the chip is as fast as possible and all of that. So, but calculating that, and there's a million ways to do those routes. And if you do a shortcut, which is actually what they have to do, they do a lot of tricks to make the problem smaller and smaller. They kind of break the chip up into different pieces, but then it still takes an incredible amount of time, where our system can actually do the ones that they've broken up faster, but then they can step back and actually we can do a bigger part. We can take the whole thing on instead.
You know, I remember the day when you pulled the top off of a computer and you looked in at the board, you could physically see wires going from one place to the other.
Yeah.
Because they had missed something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jumper wires, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they missed something when they designed the chip. So every chip had to manually have a little wire soldered on it so it could get that connection going.
Yeah.
That's a thing of the past, but what you're saying is it still isn't performing at an optimum rate that it could be if it were designed
exactly,
better.
Exactly.
So I'm a little confused still, though, because it sounds like having the memory right in the CPU, that's not the whole,
no.
that's not all of the story here,
no,
right?
It just
that's
helps.
Not what. So
yeah.
What's the other side of this then? If having the memory inside the computer or the CPU makes it so that you can do the computations a lot more quickly, what helps you solve what's seemingly unsolvable problems?
You know, That's where the physics comes in.
Okay. We don't need to get too much into the weeds. Is there a way to unpack that and make it palatable or understandable to the masses?
Is it all about the math?
It actually is about the math. So another way to look at it, too, is that when you emulate a physical circuit, like a logic gate, it's actually a differential equation is what it calculates. So what we're doing is calculating a boatload of differential equations much faster than anything else.
And because of the physics, because you're developing the storage in with the processor. So it's like having your workshop and your storage all in the same place, right?
That, and actually what they've done is with it being the physics, they're calculating different differential equations than you do in standard computing.
Because standard computing is all linear.
Yes.
Linear.
Yeah. And actually, one of the other things that they've figured out with the physics is that our technology, when you build the chip, it'll go in both directions at the same time. So if you think of normal computers, everything goes from input to output. It just goes in one direction.
One direction, right.
We don't have the notion of input or output. Everything's a terminal. So the input and output can work together.
This really basically changes the landscape.
Yeah. That sounds like the difference between alternating and direct current, right?
Yeah. I mean,
which was such an incredible leap in the electricity, right?
So this essentially is a supercomputer with supercomputer speeds without a supercomputer.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it.
So this is going to be in our watch when?
I don't know yet. as soon as I can get there.
Your background is in business, entrepreneur, right? Not necessarily in computational analysis and science.
So not science, but my background is actually technology and engineering.
Oh, so you do have a background that would be similar and fitted for this. But how did you end up working on one of the most advanced computer solutions, I'm guessing, on our planet?
Yeah.
And we're going to have to find out when we get back.
All right.
Got our last segment coming up with John Bean, founder and CEO of MEM Computing. You're listening to BizTalk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to BizTalk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. You're listening to us on ESPN 1700, but did you know you could watch us too? That's right. Watch us on Facebook. Visit our BizTalk radio page, Allen, Florida. Are you listening? Share your comments, ask your questions, and of course, we always appreciate your likes. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. We're talking with the founder and CEO of MEM Computing, John Bean. John, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
We were just getting to how you, an entrepreneur, but in it with a technology background, ended up working on a project that could be a seminal, pivotal, major turning point in the way computers calculate data these days.
Yeah. So after my last company, a company called EcoATM that you may have heard of, we did really well in San Diego.
That was the kiosk that you got paid to put your phones in?
Exactly. It's like eBay in a box.
That was yours?
Yes.
That's a great idea. Can I touch you?
I can't claim the idea, but I did work on. I did build the machine.
Nice.
So anyway, after leaving there, I went to UCSD. They invited me to come on as an entrepreneur in residence in order to help them commercialize their technology. And that's when, as I was looking at all the different IP that they had, intellectual property, I was introduced to these two brilliant PhD physicists and was just blown away by the technology that they had and realized that it needed to see the light of day.
I want to come back to that in just a second, but you said something that was interesting. UCSD wanted you to commercialize their intellectual property.
Correct.
So a lot of universities, especially those that conduct research, develop things that would be commercially viable, but the institution is not set up to market it, support it, and make money off of it. Plus, they're a nonprofit. That creates some issues, right? So they can do a public-private partnership of some sort, but what they brought you on board to do was take some of their intellectual property, figure out what's commercially viable, and launch that into the world as a separate company. I'm guessing they get to participate in the profits or the ownership or the dividends of the company somehow.
Absolutely. They have a
great model, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a royalty, and they also have a small amount of ownership in the company.
That's nice. So what you did when you were looking at their intellectual property, you spied this technology, right? The MEM computing technology. And that kind of lit your fire, right? I mean,
did
you understand it at first, or did it take a while for the impact of it to sink in before the lights started coming on?
So I didn't understand the science, and I still don't understand the science to the nth degree, but I understood the implications of the technology.
How would you know this is so complex. How would you know these guys even are on the right track?
Well,
is there a way to know that?
So that's a great question, because that was actually part of the challenge, was that there was nothing I could do to ever validate
what they're doing.
So what I did is I worked with the San Diego Supercomputer Center, and I said, would you validate it for me?
Good thinking.
Yeah.
You're a smart guy.
Oh, thanks.
And they did just that.
They did, and it performed even better than we had expected.
So the test run you made with the San Diego supercomputer,
yep,
gave you results that inspired you to move forward.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they were better than you'd hoped.
Yep.
Do you have a marketplace already targeted for the output of this once this is developed? Or are you going to need to go into partnerships with people that will determine your marketplace?
Well, so we have if you think of it as a coprocessor, we have something that will be integrated into other people's systems.
So it's a Gozenta.
It's a Gozenta, yes.
I like Gozentas.
That might be your best word, I think.
Yeah,
of Gozenta. All the Bobisms, a Gozenta is probably one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So it's a Gozenta. So it's not necessarily something that's going to replace Intel's chip or a processor or RAM. It's going to be in association with it?
Yeah. If you think of general purpose CPU, they have a math coprocessor to do all the multiplication, division, addition, subtraction, right? Because it's more efficient than a general purpose CPU.
Same thing with the graphics processor.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So we do very high math that you would send off to the coprocessor, but we're not going to work on your...
2 + 2 = 4 isn't going to make it to the processor.
Yeah, and we're not going to do anything with your, being on Facebook or what have you. But so you'll let the CPU do all of that, and we will do all the tough calculations.
But if you want to calculate pi to the end...
There you go.
I'd like to see that plugged in, see what happens to it, right?
Yeah, we've thought about doing a couple things like that where we could just do a test that would blow people's minds and help them appreciate it.
What if there was an end to pi? That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Everybody would have to give up their notions that there's no end to it.
Change the paradigm.
Yeah. And I don't know what paradigm that is. I've never really spoken with a single human being about it in my life.
What are some of the things you're considering? Because in my mind, if you could show people how many, possibilities there are in a game of solitaire, right? That's one thing that hasn't been computed, but there probably has to be a limit
I mean, there's certainly chess, right? It's like if we could play against IBM Watson and beat it in chess, wouldn't that help
us? That would be newsworthy.
Right?
Pretty impressive.
There's a game called Go.
That's the most difficult board game in the world, right? Billions of combinations on every move.
So those are areas, but the effort to do that would be precluding us from doing things that will hopefully generate revenue.
Exactly. And what kinds of things are you thinking about? Solving the traffic problem for UPS or FedEx, solving air traffic control problems, figuring out how to track North Korea's nuclear missiles. That would be a viable option, right?
Yeah,
something
that would be
like
good.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the most the easiest to pick off the tree are the what we call routing problems. So that's what UPS faces in the morning. Your bandwidth is routed. Your cell phone is routed. All these certain they're called routing problems.
Ergo Cisco's routers. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And in cellular, they have this thing that they call antenna beamforming, and that's really how they track the different devices. You've got thousands of devices that are going in every single direction, and you've got to decide which cell to send it to next. And those types of things are
is this why we need the aluminum foil on our head?
Does this scale down?
Somehow that makes sense to me when I hear that.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you saying?
I was just curious if this scales down. I mean, do you have to have like a supercomputer to run it and, UPS, and it might make sense for, but if you're a pizza delivery company, you might not be optimizing your routes, your delivery routes that way.
Right, yeah. A pizza delivery company probably wouldn't need it, but but it does scale down, and you don't necessarily need a supercomputer to do it.
Well, that's a really good point. Will it end up on our PCs at some point in time, like a 8-gigabyte graphics chip?
Absolutely.
Will
it end up on your phones? It'll be
seriously.
Absolutely.
We're talking about a near-term future.
Well, I hope so. but yeah, we're talking to cellular, mobile developers.
We're running out of time. We got about 45 seconds left.
Yep.
What's the thing that needs to get done to get this to market? You guys are still perfecting part of it? Is that what's happening?
No, we actually have it released now as a software as a service. It can be used for free by people who want to see whether or not it really does what it does.
So we should log on afterwards and check it out with our own computations, right?
Yeah.
Where do we find that site?
memcomputing.com.
Oh, that's easy.
And then once that's done and that's launched out, are you developing a hardware piece that follows on?
We will be, but really what we're looking for is industry to do that testing and give us industry validation. So we have Supercomputer Center validation, which is more academic, but if we can
get
industry.
You need real
industry, world. We need real world. Yep.
That sounds like a really fun project to work on.
It
are
is,
you working
yeah.
on that personally?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if you need to meet anybody, let me know.
Okay, I will.
John Bean, founder and CEO of MEM Computing, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good luck with this, because I really hope to see a faster computer. I don't know what for, but I'll figure out a reason. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Dana Korn is up with us next. Sonic Boom Wellness. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We'd like to take this moment to thank our engineer, Jeff Bilodeau, our music by Derek Audet, our interns, Alex, Sarah, Andrew, and in studio with us today is Leah, Deidre, and Chrissy. Thank you, ladies. We appreciate all your hard work on our social media. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
I'm Bob Ryan. Glad to have you with us. We have a great show going, and we just wrapped up with really smart guy.
Very smart.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate what he brings to the table. And the people he works with, he says are so smart they make him feel dumb. So they've got to be super. I want to meet these people
someday. MEM Computing is something to watch, I think.
I know.
And oh, definitely. Keep
check
your
it
eye
out.
On him.
We should log on and see if we can give it a problem.
I will do that.
I don't know what problem we could give it, but we could think of something for sure.
Who should we invite next on our show? Maybe we can automate
really
that.
Automate. Pick out our next best guest.
There we go.
Okay, how to get Bob to wash the car. Is that a problem? No, just a thought.
The answer is always no.
Bob doesn't
that's a simple one. Very linear.
Linear.
We're shifting gears now from car washing to Dana Korn. That was a great segue, Dana, wasn't it?
Well, we went from the super intelligent and it's kind of like, and then there's Dana.
We're glad you're here today.
From bean to corn.
Yeah, there you go.
Should I rewind and reintroduce you?
I'm fine.
Oh,
I'm
good.
Dana.
Yeah. You are the CEO, Chief Energizing Officer.
Yep.
Not Chief Executive Officer.
Whatever I want to wear that day.
Sonic Boom Wellness. Tell us a little bit about you.
Okay.
And then I want to talk about your company.
All right. Career-wise, I have two lives. So I'm known as the gluten-free guru. I did not give myself that moniker. People Magazine did. And
wait, People Magazine?
Yeah, People Magazine.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, they called me the gluten-free guru. Yeah.
That's a pretty big name.
Yeah, yeah. And For Dummies is a big name. And I've written four books in the For Dummies series.
Congratulations.
And thank you. Thank you.
I love For Dummies because I'm looking at them all the time because I'm dumb about a lot of things.
Do they have to approach you and ask if you'd do it, or is it something you submit to them and
they
say?
They do.
Oh,
no,
wow.
You have to be asked. You have to be the guru in your field, and then if you don't write, then they have a ghostwriter write for you, but I had already written several books, and so they said, we like your style, we know your expertise, and we would like you to write for them. I thought they were kidding. I thought it was a joke. I got the call, and somebody said, I'm with the For Dummies publishers, and that's a dream when you're an author, you know?
Right.
And so I thought it was a joke. I kept, who is this? And hanging up on them. I called back three times, like, seriously? Seriously, we are for the
You're lucky
the
they're persistent.
Dummies.
What an honor.
Yeah.
Well, how fun is that?
It's fun.
So you are an author. You've done quite a bit of work in writing. What are some of the other books besides the Four Dummies that you've done?
They all are about gluten-free living and the medical conditions that benefit. So I'm an expert on celiac disease, gluten sensitivity, the implications of a gluten-free diet with ADD and ADHD and others on the PDS spectrum. So anything gluten-free and the medical and the science behind it is my area of expertise, and that's what all of my books. Also, generally optimal nutrition. So I really focus, especially now today with Sonic Boom, I've shifted into more about the optimal nutrition world.
Could you help me with the optimal nutrition of ice cream and hot fudge?
Yeah, it's kind of just don't do it.
No,
it's
easy. That's not what I want to hear. I want to optimally.
No, everything in moderation, right? You can have it at once.
Yeah, absolutely. I am big on that.
So the work that you've done is in the area of celiac, right?
Yeah.
How did you end up doing that?
I was shoved into the deep end of the gluten-free pool about 26 years ago when my then toddler son was very, very sick and doctors had no idea what was wrong with him. And I kept taking him in saying he's got massive diarrhea. We're talking like 20 diapers a day. And
wow.
They
How
didn't
old
believe
was he?
Me. He was a toddler. He was about 9 months when he first started getting sick.
Wow.
And they kept thinking that I was crazy. They called me neurotic. They fired me from pediatrics offices. They said, don't ever come back. There's nothing wrong with this kid. And after several months, his belly got very distended. His personality changed. And I tried four different doctors. I ended up with four doctors. And finally, the fourth one said, you have a very sick child. But back then, nobody knew anything about gluten, much less celiac disease. They said it was a very rare pediatric condition. It's neither rare nor pediatric condition, we know today. It's the most common genetic disease of mankind, and yet still it is underdiagnosed, and people are just really not aware of it. And a lot of bad information out there now, too.
Is it a more recent development, or did people have this forever, and if they just had to live with it?
It's
or maybe they didn't
thing.
Live.
It's really that we've created this awareness, and especially I've got a really big mouth, so I'd like to think that I've had something to do with creating some of that awareness and having people actually have to go to their doctors and be educated and say, I want to be tested for this. And not only that, but the testing you're going to do isn't going to fly because they typically do two tests and you have to do five. So this is a big, big deal. And people are underdiagnosed. They're misdiagnosed. I've been told thousands. I call it the diarrhea diaries. Everyone wants to tell me their diarrhea diaries. And so I've heard thousands of stories of people who were diagnosed as having chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or arthritis when actually gluten or, you know, even headaches, migraines, behavioral disorders and anxiety and stress, it could really be related to gluten.
So if somebody does have a gluten sensitivity and it's causing problems like ADD, ADHD, all those others that you mentioned, if they give up the gluten, if that goes out of their diet, do they automatically get better or is there some other regime they have to follow along with giving up gluten?
Great question. With most conditions, you give up gluten and your health is fully restored. Doesn't mean you don't have celiac disease anymore, but you're effectively in remission. So your health is fully restored. ADD, ADHD, and other pervasive disorders like this on the spectrum, you typically have to give up casein and gluten. And there's no guarantee.
Give up what?
Casein.
I don't know what casein is.
What is casein?
It's related to dairy. And so you have to give up both. And even then, there's really no guarantee that you're going to be all the way back.
At this point, I'm hanging on to my ADHD.
You know,
because in the whole balance of things,
that's
dairy, ADHD, dairy. Yeah. I'll just see, I'm so ADD, I forgot what I was just saying. So I don't. It doesn't
you and me both.
Well, that's really good news. So what was the second thing we have to give up?
Casein.
How do you spell that?
C-A-S-E-I-N.
C-A-S-E-I-N. And that is a thing.
It's like, it is a thing.
Is that a protein or do you know? I mean, is it an enzyme?
No, it's an enzyme related to dairy. And so you give both of those up. And this is only, keep in mind, this is not for people with gluten sensitivity or celiac disease or the migraines that come or any of these things. This is only for people who have autism, ADD, ADHD. And actually, there's a lot of controversy on this. So I've got to be very careful, make sure we're talking evidence-based information, because a lot of MDs will fight me tooth and nail and say there's
no
zero
evidence
scientific
of it. Right.
evidence. And that's true. There's very little scientific evidence because it's really hard to control for diet. And so you tell people, go follow this diet.
And there's
placebo,
no big pharma behind it to do the testing.
No big pharma behind any of this.
Because nobody makes gluten
problems.
And makes a lot of money or makes gluten anti-gluten pills.
Yeah. I mean, they're starting to do that, but really it's so easy to give up gluten
so
these days.
How did you go from being a mother concerned about their child to the guru in this field? I mean, how did that transition happen where you're writing about it?
And well, it's because nobody knew anything about it, and they sent me out of the hospital, Children's Hospital San Diego, and said, go forth and feed your two-year-old kid, but don't give him one molecule of gluten or it's like giving him rat poison. And I was terrified to feed my own child, so I said, I can handle this. What's gluten? And he said, I don't have any idea. Hospital dietitian, I have no idea. So I buried myself in the UCSD Med School Library, and I was pre-med all through college, so I was familiar with this. And I learned everything I could.
Dana,
about
I want to hear the end of this in just a second. We've got to go to our first break. Dana Korn is with us. She's telling us how she got in to be the gluten guru. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you go anywhere. The best is yet to come. We'll be right back.
Well, Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting today from the ESET studios, ESET Internet Security. Do more. Get a podcast of today's show and any of our previous shows. Now we're talking. Go to ESPN1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. We're getting right back to our guest. Dana Korn is with us. We have a lot to talk about, Dana. I mean, we haven't even gotten to Sonic Boom Wellness yet, your company. But we got on this thing with gluten, and you put it much differently than I've heard people talk about gluten before. I've kind of written off a lot of what I've heard about it because the people presenting it weren't they were either all in and saying there's evidence, and you sound reasonable. You sound like you understand that there's no scientific evidence to prove this, but there's other evidence that anecdotal and things that you've seen. But you were right in the middle of describing your venture into this as you exited the doctor's office when they told you to go forth and eat no more gluten.
Yeah, and also I do want to just point out that there is evidence when you come, when you talk about celiac disease and gluten sensitivity. It's the ADHD and
Got
ADD
it. Okay.
That, yeah, that's hard to control for. So thrown into the deep end of this pool, terrified to feed my child, did all this research, learned everything I could about it, ended up hooking up, not literally, but pairing up with some
that
of the world's...
That word has had annoying new connotations,
doesn't it?
Yes.
Some of the world's leading researchers on celiac disease, and one of them in particular, very well-known man, Alessio Fasano, said in his beautiful Italian accent that I will butcher if I even try, so I won't. He said, you know, Dana, you have a big mouth, and people need to learn about this, and I think you need to, you know, go out and help people, and that's really what I did. I was big on helping people learn to live and then love a gluten-free lifestyle. So I became an advocate for the community. I've consulted with General Mills and Whole Foods and Wild Oats and you name it, Trader Joe's. And I'd like to think I have a lot to do with why we have gluten-free Cheerios today.
How funny
is that? I didn't even know
we
had gluten-free Cheerios. That's great.
I didn't either. That's wonderful.
What if you like gluten?
Well, everybody likes
gluten.
That's
a joke, right?
I mean, everybody likes it.
It tastes good, right? Doesn't it make food taste better?
Yeah, cookies, crackers, pasta, pizza, cake, you name it. Yeah, everybody likes gluten. Beer.
Do you think a lot of people feel relatively normal, but they could potentially feel better if they cut gluten out of their diet? And is it worth trying for the average individual who isn't going around, you know, feeling miserable all the time, but just has tried various different ways to feel better, and maybe this could be one of them?
I have had so many thousands of people tell me I didn't even know how badly I felt until I cut gluten out of my diet. Now, the thing is, though, you can't go gluten light and expect to feel better. You have to go all the way. The problem with going all the way is that once you've gone gluten-free, you can't be properly tested for gluten sensitivity or celiac disease. So you really should be tested first, and then regardless of what the results say, you should go ahead and give the diet a try.
How does somebody find out what the five tests that they're supposed to ask their doctor for are?
Living Gluten-Free for Dummies.
Okay.
or even actually danacorn.com. I've got them listed right there.
Beautiful. Okay, good.
And
good.
Korn is with a K.
Yes.
Dana Korn with a K.
Yep.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Well, actually, this isn't shifting gears. It's segueing right into spreading wellness.
Yeah.
I read your bio, and whenever I read about corporate wellness, I think of all the programs that are out there, you know, stop smoking programs, walking programs. And I think to myself, not what a wonderful world, but I think to myself, because that's a song that just went through my head.
Yeah.
See, it's the ADD kicking in, right?
Yeah.
I think that it's probably not a useful program at the corporate level because I just don't hear the kinds of results. But what you've done is really fascinating. Talk about how you've taken corporate wellness to a different level.
Well, thanks. First of all, I should describe what corporate wellness is, and you clearly know, but a lot of people don't. And that is where the employer says, we want to get our employees healthier. How do we do that? So we do worksite wellness, but you can't be scalable and go on site, right, and help everybody do their exercises or whatever. So we created a software as a service model, and it's a portal that gamifies wellness, and it makes it fun. So our idea, our goal is to create programs that people love and want to take part in. Everyone is motivated to be healthier. I couldn't tell you one person on the planet who wouldn't say, yeah, I'm motivated to be healthier, but do I have barriers? Do I have temptation? Mm-hmm. Can I actually do it? Do I have that self-efficacy? And that's where we step in, is we say, yes, yes, yes. We create fun social programs and make programs, really, that people want to engage in.
Before we go too more into the fun of the programs, what's the motivation for the companies? Why do they care if their employees are healthy?
Well, number one, they know that healthier employees are happier employees. They're more productive. They're more engaged with their jobs. They're more their relationships with colleagues and teamwork and camaraderie, morale, all of that improves. You are going to find a lot of employers who say, we want to cut to the bottom line. We're paying for everybody's health insurance, and we want to reduce those health care costs.
And they do get better rates when their employees are healthier.
Yeah, yes. I mean, theoretically.
Not pure altruism then. But
yeah, and we're not going to sit here like our competitors do and claim a 12-to-1 ROI if you do Sonic Boom Wellness. We're not going to say we will reduce your health care claims. It's impossible to do so. For one thing, you cannot measure what you prevent. So how would I say, you know, we prevented 7 heart attacks at your company this year. What does that save you? You can't do that. It's fuzzy math. And that's what our competitors try to do. So we stay away from that. We talk about value on investment. How many people are engaged continuously with the program? Yeah, are their biometrics improving? That's a lagging indicator. You know, we've got people doing bad things for 30 years and we can maybe help improve their biometrics. But are they engaged? Do they love the program? Do the employers love the program? Are they hearing, thank you for putting this program in place? And are we seeing Sonic success stories?
So you said you gamify this.
Yeah.
So I'm picturing a game of Frogger. Remember that game where the frog has to leap over the lily pads?
The arcade game.
No.
Okay,
boy,
Tetris?
That's going back a ways.
No. Pong?
Pong?
Nice.
Okay, I figured since you gamified wellness, you would at least know. Do you know any? Those are the only 3 games I know.
Yeah.
So I'm picturing that you're playing a game against maybe yourself or your coworkers. Like if you walk a mile, you get a point or you get to go like Donkey Kong, they go
up and
down things, right?
Yeah, you're closer there. When you talk about your coworkers, you're kind of nailing where we go.
Okay, so where do we go with it?
We drive it to a social level. So now, what's something fun you guys do or stress reduction?
Radio shows.
Something for stress reduction.
Surfing, running,
hiking.
Surfing, hiking.
Meditating.
Okay.
Horseback riding.
So Aaron says, I want to create a contest to see who can get the most hours of surfing in this weekend.
Yes.
And maybe nobody here surfs, and maybe you work for a very large company, which you do, and you put out this contest, and all of a sudden you've got 40 people joining your contest, and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know 40 people surfed. Where do you surf? Oh, I surf Moonlight Beach. Where do you surf? Now all of a sudden you've got buddies, you've got camaraderie, and you're more driven to get out and get more hours of surfing in, or meditation, or hiking, or whatever that may be. So we create this. Do you want to compete? Do you want to cooperate? Maybe we're all cooperating to raise money for the homeless shelters or to raise. We do a cooperative event where we raise. Everybody's burning calories. You're in a contest. So you've got your device on. You're on the leaderboards. Ooh, Dana burned more calories than anybody. Yay, me. And then we take all the calories at the end of the contest. We add them up and we donate equivalent calorie packs to starving children in Africa. We have saved dozens and
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Seriously.
Yeah, right? It's neat.
What a great idea.
Right.
And then you bring shame into it, too, because if people aren't getting out there.
You got it. Exactly.
This is really
shame
good.
Shame you're working at.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about shame. You want to hear
the best?
Hang
on 1 second. We'll do that when we get back. Sonic Boom Wellness. Dana Korn is with us. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
I don't think you want to go anywhere, really. Seriously.
No, come on back.
Stay with us.
Everybody's got Surfing USA.
Perfect, Jeff. Good choice, as usual. Surfing in the USA. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Tomorrow, our in-studio guest will be Gina Champion from the company Kane of ANI, and Jason J. Kruger, president of Signature Analytics. Tune in tomorrow and hear their fantastic stories, too. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
I'm Bob Ryan.
And just real quick, it's Gina Champion Kane. Her company's ANI.
Oh,
so
is
that's
it really?
It's a hyphenated last name, in case she's listening today.
Oh, sorry, Gina. Okay, Aaron just saved me.
So instead of it's a hyphenated last name, it's not a hyphen to the name of the company.
Right. It's a hyphenated last name.
Okay.
I can see how you could make that mistake.
Okay. Thank you, Aaron.
You're welcome.
Dana Korn is with us. We're talking about some of the ways they gamify health and wellness at companies. Great ideas. Just real quick, there's a lot of ways you've gamified things. You haven't turned it into Frogger or Tetris, but you have turned it into a competition amongst corporate employees. But the thing that you just talked about was like the most exciting, fascinating idea I've ever heard in wellness. You take the amount of calories somebody burns and adopt that and turn that into a food pack with the same amount of calories that goes to somebody in need.
Yep, exactly. Or maybe
genius.
People ante into the contest by you have to bring 10 cans to work, mm-hmm. and then everybody's in the contest, and at the end, the person who wins the contest gets to half a day of PTO and gets to donate them to the homeless shelter.
That's or brilliant.
Something so
like
do you that. Have it's these neat. Ideas on your website or a part of the
No,
product?
We're not giving away our secret sauce. Our competitors would be all over that all day long. But these are the types of promotions that our account managers come up with, and they're tailored for every client.
I want to be in your brainstorming sessions.
Yeah, they're fun. We have a good time.
It sounds like it's yeah. really fun.
Yeah, we empower everyone. One of our boomers too. Every employee we have is empowered to come up with great ideas, and they do. They are amazing.
So now everybody's a boomer, not just the older generation.
Yeah, everybody's a boomer at Sonic Boom. Boom.
Just real quick. Boom. Yeah. Where did you come up with the name Sonic Boom? Just out of curiosity. Is it because it's thunderous? It's
no. We were breaking the barriers to wellness, and my husband and I went to Zion, and we went camping to come up with this idea for this company. And on the way home, they were diverting the space shuttle to Edwards Air Force Base, and we heard this sonic boom, and Brian had never heard it, and he said, whoa, what was that? I said, oh, that was a sonic boom, and breaking the sound barriers, and oh, we're breaking the barriers to wellness. Boom.
There you go. There it was.
That's a great story for us. Some of them are just born like, oh, it just sounded good.
Yeah.
But that's,
yeah.
there's some real meaning to it behind.
Yeah.
Well, the people that just sounded good probably didn't think it was boring.
No, and I probably shouldn't have said that live because now people are going to be very self-conscious
yes,
about their
they will,
business.
From now on.
Oh, no.
You just set the stage for a disappointing, like, we can't ask anybody where their name came from.
No, I don't think that's true.
So where do you go from here? You're on top of the world, it looks like. You've got the tiger by the tail. What happens now?
Lightspeed Wellness.
Lightspeed Wellness, next generation, next gen. We continue to perfect our programs. We're all about innovation. We are creating programs people love. The thing is, what excites people 2 years ago doesn't necessarily excite people today. We're so highly stimulated in today's environment that it does require a lot of innovation to stay ahead of all the new generations, the millennials. You know, are they going to be stimulated in the same way? We go to a company, they say, hey, we have 60-year-old men who work here, and we've got 22-year-old kids. No offense. So
to our 22-year-olds in the office here, right?
Exactly.
How much of where you go is based on employee feedback? Do you take
a
programs
lot.
At one company and say, this is what other people are doing to have success? And
we
you
do.
Know.
We share best practices. We've got one group right now celebrating Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And what they're doing, this is in the Midwest. It's a large client called Kerry Group. And what they're doing all week is
the furniture company, Kerry?
No.
No, different one. Okay.
It's a food company. And they're wearing all week, they're wearing pink. And then we have a part of our program called Caught You Being Healthy and also Busted. But they're taking healthy selfies and doing healthy
selfies,
things. And then they post it on our site. So part of what we do is a lot of social interaction and healthy selfies. Or we reward each other. So I see you eating quinoa for lunch, and I say, oh, Montana, nice job, pretty quinoa that you have there. And you say, thank you, here's my recipe. And we talk, everybody comments and likes it. But now I see Aaron eating a donut in the break room, and I busted you. So now we're holding each other accountable. We're interacting. I can bust myself. So if I blow it,
you're
going to
bust
falls.
Me for eating a donut.
Yeah, darn right.
I could see that turning around. I mean, it'd be, you know, some people
now everybody's going, instead of
that.
Smoking, we're going outside to the donut area.
Yeah, we have holes. No
and they've got a little carton of milk hidden someplace, right?
Yeah, it's all about holding each other accountable and holding yourself accountable, because we all fall off the wagon. We all make mistakes, but that's okay. You can hop back on. And we're also all about little tiny behavioral changes. So we would never say, okay, you know, everybody's got to go get a BMI of 18. We would say every day, cut 100 calories out of your diet. And in 1 year, that's 10 pounds you just lost. Just 100. It's a piece of cheese off your bread, off your sandwich. Better yet, leave the bread off. It's got gluten anyway.
Of course.
So you integrate the fund and the enjoyable into staying or getting healthy and well, right?
Exactly.
You've mentioned a lot of things that seem like you would get marginal improvement off of them. What about things like smoking? Because that's one of the tough ones that employers are working on helping employees with.
Yeah.
And sometimes the employers are actually smokers as well.
Yep.
What do you do with that?
A lot of our clients and our members have told us, because I'm adopting healthier lifestyle and healthier habits because of Sonic Boom, why on earth would I smoke? I gave it up just because I was headed in the right direction. So that's beautiful. We also offer coaching, telephonic health coaching. And I would say probably, I hope our director of coaching doesn't disagree with me here, but I would say probably that's one of the things that can be most effectively managed through coaching is tobacco cessation and weight loss too. But I think those two things are well handled through coaching. So we do both.
What are the smallest companies that this works with in terms of size?
Well, we used to go down to, 15 people. Now our minimum is 200. We've got actually a special program for 200 to 500. And then most of our clients are in the several thousand employees, 2,000, 5,000, 60,000.
So when you go into a company, it's a big deal. It's
a big deal. Oh, they're spending a pretty penny on this program. So they are committed to the program. We are not the check the box. We have a wellness program solution. You want that? You go to Anthem and you get your carrier cheapo program that doesn't work. We are the premium solution that is working, but it's expensive. And senior management has to buy into that, which is beautiful because once they've bought into it, then everybody sees and follows their example. And so it's actually a good thing.
So once you see the CEO out walking around the block and doing the power walk and...
For sure. Yeah.
So that does make a difference.
Are most your clients first-time users or do they have to go through that awful wellness experience first before they realize they need the Rolls Royce, the sonic boom of wellness programs?
That's a great question, Aaron. I think a lot of our clients have come to us after having an experience with another vendor that just wasn't effective. And they say, okay, now we've got to move to the premium solution. We don't typically get the newbies in the market because we're the Porsche, of the wellness companies.
How long is the ramp up for a new client? Let's say you get a client with 2,000 employees. How long does it take you to ramp up? Is it a quarter or six months?
90 days or so.
90 days?
Yeah. And we customize for them. We do a custom promotional plan. Everything is really built around their goals, their culture, their initiatives, and then our program on top of it to synergize.
Can employees be an advocate for this? Meaning if I see my friend over at XYZ company's got this great program, can they bring it to their management or the companies, or does it have to be the top brass?
No, they can absolutely. It's usually driven through benefits. So if somebody, we get this a lot. My husband works for a company that has Sonic Boom and we want it too. And we're like, great, put us in touch with your employee benefits manager and we'll do the rest.
And it doesn't have to be Southern California.
No, anywhere. All of our clients are national.
Any outside the United States yet?
A lot of our clients have a presence. We're in about 42 different countries, so they've got a presence elsewhere, but they're U.S.-based companies.
Dana Korn, thank you so much. Sonic Boom Wellness, sonicboomwellness.com. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
You've been listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
You folks go and have a great and prosperous day. Bye-bye.